course, yep.
If it's all right, I'll use this mic there rather than the center mic. Good morning, folks. And I'm not sure what you're accustomed to, as James and I spent some time together earlier, I guess late last month. We both commented, if this is a good message, it's just a one-off and I only have to do one a year, whereas he's going to do 52. If it's a bad message, he's like, that just makes it so much easier for me to come back and jump in. So I'm not sure either one of us were thinking of you folks as much as we were just thinking we've got a Sunday to put in. But it really is nice to spend some time with you folks here this morning. And if you're okay, I'm going to steal this stool. This will be my comfort object for this morning. And I'll trust that you'll be okay if I'm a little more casual, knowing that I'm coming from a camp background. And we work with young people most of the time. And so, as you can imagine, it is a little more casual when we're at camp. Maybe what I'll do is give you a little bit of an idea, who am I, whereas this is the first time we've met, and then a little bit of what's been going on at the camp before we open our Bibles, if that's okay. If at any point you're thinking, you know what, this is not what I signed up for this morning, you can wave me off and tell me, Ben, you're going on too many rabbit trails, let's focus. First off, so as Ken mentioned, my family, Charity and I, with our four girls, that's right, four. I am in therapy. I won't embarrass them because one of them is still in the room, but we seem to be approaching that age where earlier this fall I was informed that I'm no longer the coolest person they know. And I'm not sure how I got bumped off the list, but I'm now off the list. And we've got four girls. Hannah is our oldest. She's 11. Eden is 9. Mariah is 5. And Sadie is 3. And we've been married for 14 years. Are both coming from the Maritime provinces. New Brunswick is home for us. Charity's mom and dad traveled kind of throughout the Maritime provinces as she was growing up. Her dad's a pastor, and he's pastoring in a Baptist church in Ontario right now. And my mom and dad, we grew up in Moncton, New Brunswick, and they're still there. Just before we entered into camp ministry, I pastored for 10 years at Baptist churches in New Brunswick. And then we've been doing camp for a number of years since. And prior to coming to Camp Caroline, we were serving at a camp just outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, kind of had the best of both worlds. On one side of our property, we were bordering a lake. A freshwater lake was just fantastic at swimming and playing with the campers. But on the other side, we had the ocean, and so we kind of got the best of both worlds. But I figured if you had to leave the coastline of Nova Scotia for anywhere, I'm okay to come to the Rockies. And we've just loved being in Alberta these last few years. And we arrived June of 2015, and it's been an incredible journey so far, just to see what God's doing through the ministry, to be part of the ministry. And we've enjoyed the mountains, even the snow. Though it may be a little earlier than what we are accustomed to out east. I know Charity was talking to her dad the other day, and he just did a round of golf. And we said to him, we probably won't be doing golf for a few more months now, at least not in this part of the world. So that's a little bit about who we are and where we're coming from. Let me tell you about what's going on at the camp. Most of you, I'm hoping, have been out to the camp in the last few years. I know some of you ladies have been out, and maybe you folks don't know this, but there's a group of ladies here at the church that every spring come out and bake literally hundreds of cookies to help us in our summer ministry. And so you folks are kind of near and dear to our heart because you're always giving us some sweet treats for the end of our days, and we've just been so thankful for you folks as you've been coming and serving, oftentimes unknown to campers because they wouldn't even see you. But we have had an incredible year. But if you haven't been out to the camp in the last few years, it's hard to describe Camp Caroline as a camp. I grew up going to camp. And my first summer, the camp that Charity and I both grew up going to, my very first summer was back in the early 80s.
And I can remember going in, and the cabin I was assigned to was Log Cabin, and it was named because it was a log cabin. And it was an old log cabin, and it had those old military-style metal bunk beds. You remember the ones that they made lots of noise when you moved around, and they were just this rusted old metal, and they had these kind of thin mattresses that had been used for years and years, and the grout between the logs in the cabin, it had long since gone away, and you could actually peer between the logs, and if you were on the outside, you could see the inside. If you were on the inside, you could see the outside, which was fine, because at that point, we only had all boys or all girls camps, and so privacy wasn't a big concern. The bigger concern was if it rained, you got wet. And so you always wanted to be on the inside of the cabin on one of the inner bunks rather than an outer bunk. But I remember going to camp, and that was the conditions. Camp Caroline, it's really hard to describe when you think you're in one of these three beautiful lodges. Recently, the lodges, two of the lodges have gotten new bunks and new mattresses, and they're pillow top mattresses. And you go in and you've got an indoor swimming pool and an indoor gymnasium and this beautiful dining area. I mean, it's just, we are so fortunate to have the camp that we have. And we operate year-round, as many of you would be aware. This past summer, we saw over 1,300 campers come through one of our summer camps and had an opportunity to welcome all of those campers and to share the story of Jesus with each and every one. One of my favorite times in the summer is Thursday night. We have all the campers go up to the fireside, and we have that campfire going, and we sing silly songs that are kind of fun and burn off some of that energy. Then we sing songs similar to the ones that we sang here this morning that remind us of who God is and what he's all about. And as we're finishing that fireside, as the sun is going down and as the fires burn down, we give campers an opportunity to share some of what God's been doing in their life, maybe that week or that past year. And I just love hearing the stories from campers. Stories, you know, we had a junior high camper who stood up, and this isn't uncommon anymore, but more and more of our campers are coming to camp, and they've never heard the story of Jesus. It's hard to imagine that here in Canada that could be the case, but more and more families, they don't go to church on Sunday morning. Maybe Grammy and Grampy don't even go to church on Sunday morning, and there's not a Bible in their home, and they're not going to church at Christmas or even Easter, and so more and more of our campers are coming, and they've never heard the story of Jesus. And so we have that privilege of sharing this incredible story. And we had one junior high camper this past summer who stood up and that Thursday night and just shared, you know, my friend invited me. I didn't know what I was going to be doing here. And all of a sudden I come to this church camp, and I've never really been to church. And the speaker was talking about this God that I had never really heard about. And my counselor was sharing a little more about who this God is and how much he really loves me. And this week, I met God for the first time. And I just thought, Lord, I hope that never gets too old for me. To hear a camper stand in front of their friends and say, I met Jesus for the first time this summer. We had another group, so we do camps for little ones and for not so little ones, and then we do family camps. In fact, we had a family camp last weekend, and the weather was entirely different last weekend than this weekend. It was our fall family camp last weekend, and we could get outside, and we did all sorts of fall activities. This weekend, we probably would have needed to have changed our programming, and it wouldn't have needed to have been a winter family camp. But last week, we just had a great family camp, and in the summer, we did two other family camps. And interesting, about this time last year, a travel agency in Toronto contacted us. To our knowledge, not coming from a faith background at all, just a travel agency. And they were looking for a summer camp that would welcome families from China. And I thought, well, we do have family camp, and I suppose that they would be welcome. I mean, we welcome folks from all over, but I'm not sure we've had Chinese families come to family camp before. And We worked with them for a couple months and arranged to have a number of families fly into Calgary just before family camp started, and then the travel agency would meet them, and they would travel up together, and they would go to family camp. And we were very clear, you need to understand that we're an English camp. Yes, they're actually looking for an English camp, okay. You understand that we're a church camp, yes. And you understand that we use the Bible in all of our teaching, yes. You understand that we'll unashamedly teach all of our families about Jesus, yes. Okay, then if they want to come, they're welcome to come. And so this summer, they drove up to the camp, and just prior to their arrival, one of our other families had heard that they were coming and said, well, Ben, what are you going to do with the Bible? And I was like, well, we're going to teach from the Bible. Okay, Ben, yes, we know that. But if they don't speak English, how are they going to read the Bible themselves? And I thought, I didn't think of that. And they said, well, would it be okay if we arranged to have some Bibles in their language here at camp that we could give them? And I thought, that's brilliant. See, one of the things we believe at camp, just like you folks, we believe that the Bible is God's word. And it shows us, it teaches us how to live life. In fact, we say that God wrote the book on life. And we believe that it needs to be part of our teaching every day. And so this family arranged to have Bibles come in, and we gave those Bibles to these families. And about halfway through the week, one of our other family campers had been on a canoe trip with some of these Chinese campers, and they're just chatting back and forth, you know, how's the week, and are you enjoying it? And one of the moms made this comment. You know, it's interesting. We're not really a religious family. We don't really, you know, we don't really have a lot of spiritual things in our lives, but we're really enjoying the week, and the camp gave us a Bible. Never had one before. And my husband started reading it, and he cannot put it down. And so this camper continued the conversation, then later shared the story with Charity and I. And as we were praying, we pray every morning as a staff, and as we were praying that next morning, I said to the staff, some of them are young leaders. I said, you never know what God's going to do in a day at camp. You never know how God's going to use today for his purposes. We know that his word teaches us that it will not return void, that it will produce the harvest that he has planned and prepared. And I said, who's to say that down the road, a generation from now, we won't hear a story of a grandchild talking about, my grandfather went to Canada one summer to go to a summer camp, and they gave him a Bible, and my grandfather met Jesus while he was reading that Bible, and he taught my father, and my father taught me. And I thought, God, you are doing incredible things even today in the foothills of Alberta through a ministry called Camp Caroline. And we get to be part of that, and we love it. I could just tell story after story of what God's been doing at the camp and his faithfulness. And many of you have, over the years, been praying for the camp. You've been supporting the camp. And I want to just share with you that we want to thank you for that. We want to encourage you to continue to pray for the camp as we welcome campers all year round. We're busier, believe it or not, from Labor Day to Victoria Day than we are in the summer. As busy as the summer is, and if you've ever been out to the camp in the summer, it's just kind of from breakfast to bedtime, just nonstop. But we jump into Labor Day, and we go from 5 days a week to working with campers to 7 days a week. So all through the school year, we have the privilege of working with school kids and campers and churches and families. In fact, there's a family camp out at the camp this weekend. And we just love it. And we get to see what God's doing week after week. And we consider it such a privilege. And so I'd encourage you to continue to pray for the camp. Something that you can be praying for, and this is directly connected to ministry, and yet maybe not something we would typically think about when we think about the ministry. But this month, we have some meetings with the association. And I trust that you're aware of this, but on the 14th and the 15th, on the 14th, we're going to meet in Edmonton at McKernan Baptist, and on the 15th, we're going to be in Calgary at Renfrew to talk about having the camp incorporate. And it's one of those pieces that we are at a position now, at a day and an age, where we need to to begin to work on some of the organizational pieces to ensure that the ministry continued to move forward. We've been fortunate all these years to have such a great relationship with our churches and with the association, and certainly don't want to jeopardize that at all. In fact, we're working more with our churches and the association than we have for years because we're just so committed to the partnerships that we have. But we have those meetings on the 14th and 15th, and you may not be able to attend, but you can be praying for us, praying that decisions are made properly and that God will have his way as we move forward as a ministry, working together with our churches and the association. If you have any questions and you want to talk more about the ministry, you grab me at any point, you give me a call, send me an email, let me know. I love talking about what the camp's doing and what God's doing through the camp. But right now, we should open our Bibles. So if you've got your Bible, I would encourage you to open it Leviticus. Not sure when the last time you spent some time in Leviticus, but I'd like us just to go into Leviticus for a few moments this morning. Leviticus chapter 16. In Leviticus chapter 16, we read God's instructions to his people about the Day of Atonement. Now, let's do a little history lesson to make sure that we've got the context for the Day of Atonement. And if you were to open your Bible and just kind of flip through a little further to Numbers chapter 29, God gives the Israelites some instructions around a series of times in their calendar where he wanted them to kind of slow things down, to be reminded of who he is, what he's all about, and what he's called them to. Remember that the Israelites, they were not simply a nation in the ancient world. They weren't simply one of the other people groups. The nation of Israel was a group of people that God had called for a particular purpose. They were a covenant people. They had an agreement with God to be about something more than just kind of day-to-day life. And so throughout the calendar year of the Israelites, God wanted them to be reminded of that. Because you know what it's like. It happens every week. From Sunday to Sunday, there's a lot that we have to do. And sometimes it's easy to forget that we too are a covenant people. We too have been called by God for something more than just one day to the next. And so in Numbers chapter 29, God lays out a series of instructions around these times. And he gives instructions around what would be the Feast of Trumpets. And it precedes the Day of Atonement. And so it would normally start sometime early in the fall. Sometimes in our calendar it would fall in September. Other times it would fall in October. In fact, this year it fell in October. And the Feast of Trumpets, it would begin on the first day of the seventh month. And it would call the people together by sounding of a trumpet. And that trumpet would kind of just resound through the land. And as folks heard it, they would stop what they were doing. And they would come together. In fact, you may remember in the book of Nehemiah, they observed this day together, having not observed it for a while. And the people all gathered together. And when they gathered together, they opened the book of the law and they read the book of the law. And as they read it, they wept, for they were reminded that they were the people of God, a people of great purpose, a people of great promise. And so as we read in Numbers chapter 29, the Feast of the Trumpets would start on the first day of the seventh month, and it would last for 10 days. And on those 10 days, the people would be called just to reflect on their lives. They would be called to take stock of their lives in relation to God's standard for righteousness, in relation to the law. And as they reflected, if they came to realize, boys, there was an outstanding offense in my relationship with a family member or a neighbor or someone in my community, the instruction that they received was, you need to take steps to reconcile. you need to take steps to make it right. You need to take steps to ask for forgiveness. And they would do that over a period of 10 days. And then on the 10th day of the 7th month, they would recognize one of their most holy days, and that was the Day of Atonement. In Leviticus chapter 16, we get kind of the detailed instructions as to what God wanted to see take place on this particular day. This was a day unlike any others, and it begins with God's instruction to the high priest. In this particular case, at this time, it was Aaron. And God gave him very specific instructions as to how he was supposed to behave and act on this particular day. And the instructions first said, Aaron, you must get yourself ready to represent the people before me. But then as he did that, then he was to collect two goats. And this is the part of the instructions that I want us to pay attention to this morning. He was to collect two goats, and they would bring in the two goats in front of the people, so the people would all be gathered, similar to what you folks are, though they maybe wouldn't be on pews, but they would be in a general area, and they would usher these two goats in, and they would walk through the people, and as they walked through the people would be mindful of them, and they would bring them up in front of the people, and Aaron would cast lots. And we'd roll the dice. One of these goats would become the sacrifice, the other the scapegoat. And the sacrifice would be brought in front of the people, and Aaron was given instructions as to how to sacrifice that lamb or that goat. And in sacrificing, he was to collect in a basin all of the blood poured out from that sacrifice. Now you should start to be thinking, I've heard some of this terminology. There's some imagery here that's going to seem awfully familiar. And they would collect that blood, and then Aaron would take that blood, and in front of all the people, he would go into an area of the temple, and he would put his hands in the blood, and he would begin to paint the wall in front of the people with that blood. And the call to the people was, sin brings death. And in front of all of you, we want to remember sin brings death, and we have all sinned. And the people, having just spent the last 10 days reflecting on the law in their own life and their failure to uphold it, would look at that painted wall and realize, I am to blame. And then Aaron would finish that, and he would grab the scapegoat. And he would bring the scapegoat up in front of the people, and his hands covered in the blood of the sacrifice. He would place his hands on the scapegoat, marking that goat. And then he would have someone collect that goat, walk it through the people as it had been marked. He would usher it out of the area. They would take it out past the people. They would take it out past the community, out past the city or the town. They would take it out. They would take it out into the wilderness. They would release it to wander alone and separated from the community, to remind the people that not only does our sin result in death, but it results in a separation from one another, a separation from God. And can you imagine once a year gathering together to be reminded of what sin does in our life? How it brings death. Death in our relationship with God. But not just death in our relationship with God, but it brings death in our own relationships. In our marriages. And in our families. With friends. And maybe sometimes that death is pronounced and obvious and terrible and you can't ignore it. But other times, it shows itself a little less obvious and much more subtle. It shows itself myself in severed relationship. And then can you imagine once a year being reminded that it doesn't just bring death, but that it also separates. It creates a chasm between us and God, but also between one another. If we don't keep short accounts, we can't be in good relationship. And so once a year, early in the fall, the people would gather together to be reminded. And the book of Hebrews in chapter 10 really should flip there. I want to read a few verses here, because if we catch this part and understand some of this history, this is just brilliant. And it says in chapter 10 of the book of Hebrews, verse 1, the law is only a shadow of the good things that are coming, not the realities themselves. For this reason, it can never, by the same sacrifices repeated endlessly year after year, make perfect those who draw near to worship. Otherwise, they would have not stopped being offered. For the worshipers would have been cleansed once for all and would no longer have felt guilty by their sin. But those sacrifices are an annual reminder of sins. It is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. But here's the hope. This is why we welcome campers every year. This is why we do what we do at Camp Caroline. This is why we're here this morning. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, sacrifice and offering you do not desire, but a body you prepared for me. With burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased. Then I said, here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, my God. First he said, sacrifices and offerings, burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not desire, nor you were pleased with them, though they were offered in accordance to the law. Then he said, here I am, I have come to do your will. He sets aside the first to establish the second. And by that will, we were made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. You know, it's incredible. This opportunity that you and I have, whether it's through a ministry of Camp Caroline or through a ministry of a local church, but this incredible opportunity that we have. You see that just as the Israelites were a people of covenant, just as the Israelites were a people of promise and purpose, we too are a people of covenant. We too are a people of promise and purpose. And that covenant is made through Jesus Christ. That covenant is no longer do we once a year on the seventh day of our calendar need to invite everybody together, and then no longer do we need to bring those two goats, a sacrifice and a scapegoat, and no longer do we need to, I mean, we'd have to change how we build our buildings entirely, because if you were sacrificing all those animals, I mean, it would just make such a terrible mess. Carpet would not work. Our health inspectors would, I'm not sure they would have any idea how to handle all of that mess. But we don't have to do it anymore, because it was done once for all, completely holy. The account has been settled. And our call is to abide in that settled account. Our call is to invite others to come under that settled account. Our day-to-day living is to be a pointing toward, my life is not my own. The account has been settled, not because somehow I figured out how to get it done, but because Jesus got it done. And our relationships and our marriages are to be a pointing. Our relationships as parents with our kids and kids to our parents, and our relationships with those that we work with, whether we work together with family, and I suspect there are a number here who you work together with family, or whether it's you're working with neighbors or with folks that are commuting in and out. But the call on our lives is that we would continually point by our very lives that it's not all about what we've done, it's about what he's done. And when when we have sin, I mean, the truth of the matter is, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that once it's settled that we no longer sin. That's why Paul writes in the book of Romans that, you know, I want to do this, but I do that, and I don't want to do that, but I do it. And I'm caught up in this back and forth. I know what's right, but I choose not to do what's right. He says, but thanks be to Jesus Christ, who has paid the price in full. And so when we, as his people, say that thoughtless word, or don't do that thing that is right, or bicker, or grumble, we don't need to bring up the goats. The Lamb has paid the full price, and so we come to the Lamb, and we confess that sin, and he is faithful and just to forgive that sin. And when we have offended one another, we go to that other, and we confess that sin. And that's part of that ministry of reconciliation that Paul speaks of in the book of Romans and to the church in Corinthians. And it's this incredible back and forth of what it looks like to live lives that have now been redeemed and are no longer our own. And as folks who don't yet know him see that, they recognize there's something different about how you live your life. And then we have an opportunity, an incredible opportunity to say, well, let me tell you about Jesus and what he's done. Let me tell you about who he is and what he's all about. And what I just find such a high privilege is seeing week after week as we serve campers, seeing them respond to that message. And it's such a privilege. It's just such an incredible opportunity to watch him come into their lives. Many of whom have never heard the story and are hearing it for the first time, but a number of whom have heard it, but allowed life to kind of push him to the side. And so this morning, as we kind of wrap up, and we need to wrap up, and what I'd like to invite you to do is we have one more closing song. My encouragement to you would be to take stock of your life. If you're in relationship with him, the expectation would be that we're continually keeping short accounts. That if there's someone that you need to have a conversation with, that with grace you will go and appropriately, you know, confess that sin and say, you know, I did it again. And I was thoughtless. I was unkind. I was disrespectful. I was selfish. I was greedy. And that we would keep short accounts with one another. This week, if you have an opportunity with someone who maybe you don't know if they're in faith relationship with Jesus, that you would, you know, when that prompting comes, when the Spirit is inviting you to share, that you would be ready to share. And so what we'll do as we invite the team to come and to lead this last song is just, you may need to take a moment and just sit quietly and do a heart check. We do it so many different times and so many different ways at camp, and Sunday is a lot like camp. Instead of camp happening once a year, you guys, you know, we get together once every week just to remind ourselves of who he is and what he's all about. And so as we take time and sing, my invitation to you folks would be just to take stock of how are you doing in your relationship with him? How are you doing in your relationship with one another? And if there are some conversations that you need to have, then this morning before you leave, just to bring those before the Lord, he'll direct and guide how to have conversations. I'm confident of that. We see it time and time again. Please know that we're praying for you folks at the camp. We meet every week and we take time to pray for campers and staff and the churches that we support and the churches that support us. And it's just such a privilege to do ministry together. If you haven't been to the camp for a few years, come out and visit us. We love visitors. We had Barry was out last weekend for fall family camp. We've got a winter family camp coming up at the end of February. But maybe you can't come to a camp. You'd just like to come out and see us. we're there all the time, and just would love to show you around and tell you some more about what God's doing. So don't be strangers, and we'll look forward to seeing you out at some point here, if not this winter, maybe next spring or summer.
In Christ alone my hope is found. He is my light, my strength, my song. This cornerstone, this solid ground, firm through the fiercest drought and storm. What heights of love, what depths of peace, when fears are stilled, when striving cease. My comforter, my all in all, here in the love of Christ I stand.
Why don't you stand with us?
In Christ alone, who took on flesh, fullness of God in helpless babe, this gift of love and righteousness, scorned by the ones he came to save, till on that cross as Jesus died, the wrath of God was satisfied. For every sin on him was laid. Here in the death of Christ I live. There in the ground his body lay, light of the world by darkness slain. Then bursting forth in glorious day, up from the grave he rose again. And as he stands in victory, since curse has lost its grip on me, for I am his and he is mine, bought with the precious blood of Christ. No guilt in life, no fear in death, this is the power of Christ in me. From life's first cry to final breath, Jesus commands my destiny. No power of hell, no scheme of man, can ever pluck me from his hand, till he returns and calls me home. Here in the power of Christ I'll stand.
Father, as we